Greetings and welcome to the latest edition of the Entheogenic Evolution Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Martin, and I'm happy to have you with me today. For this week's episode, I have an interview for you with Paul Karasik. Paul Karasik is the author of the new book, Getting High on Leadership, which is what brought us together originally for this conversation. But Paul has got some other areas of interest as well. He is the founder of the Psychedelic Institute of Los Angeles and also is the founder and organizer of the Psychedelic Awakenings event, which had its inaugural event last year in Los Angeles and will be meeting again in September of this year. So Paul and I talk about all of that, and he's someone who was on the psychedelic scene a long, long time ago is when he got started. So we've got a lot of history and other issues to talk about. We'll be getting to that in just a few minutes after we get some announcements out of the way. Do have a few people to thank for showing some support for the Entheogenic Evolution podcast over this past week. Had a few small donations via PayPal by Simon, Brooke, and Nick. Thank you all very much for that support. It is very much appreciated. And over at Patreon over this past week, got a new Spore supporter by Tara and a new Substrate supporter with Adam. So thank you all for your support of this podcast. If you would like to support this podcast, it's quite easy. If you'd like to make a financial donation, it's always appreciated. You could stop by my personal webpage, martinball.net. There's the PayPal link at the top right of the page, and also there is a link over to my Patreon page. And I really do encourage people to sign up over at Patreon and become a patron. If that is something that you are interested in doing, there's everywhere from $1 a month to $5, $10, $20, $40, $60, and $100 a month. And the further up you go on that scale, the more bonuses and access you get. I always do try and give something back to my supporters. I'm not just asking for your money, but to offer my services as well as my creations in terms of music and books and art and all of that, and try and give back to my patrons as a way of just saying thank you for the ongoing support. And of course, there's no obligation over there at Patreon. You can come and go as you please. You can change your level whenever you need to. At the $40 a month, after 3 months, that gets you a 1 hour video call with me. At $60 a month, at the cap level, that gets you a 30 minute call per month. Or at the God Molecule level of $100 a month, that gets you a 1 hour video call with me. And there I do offer my professional non-dual entheogenic integration services. So it's great for people who are looking for ongoing support, ongoing reflection and feedback. And as I said, there's no obligation. You can change at any time. So thank you to all of my supporters over at Patreon. As I always like to say, you guys do make a big difference in my life, and I really do appreciate that support. In other news, I'm very happy to share with all of you, the listening audience, that my 13th audiobook, which is 5-MeO-DMT Integration, Embodying Non-Duality, is Not What You Think, Education and Empowerment for Working with the God Molecule, is officially done. I have submitted all the files for review and quality check, and once those get approved, they will be going out to Audible, Amazon, and the Apple Bookstore. And who knows, maybe even by next week's podcast episode, I will be able to tell you that it is officially out there. And of course, my 12 other audiobooks are already available out there. And if you want something to listen to, I've got hours and hours and hours of stuff for you to listen to. Let's talk about what's coming up here on the Entheogenic Evolution podcast. With this interview with Paul, this is the final interview that I banked a couple months ago, so I've been busy getting some new interviews in, and just let me tell you what's coming. I have a really interesting and very raw interview with Ian Wallen that was from earlier this week. He runs the Silo Sangha here in Ashland, Oregon, and he is someone who tried going through the psilocybin-assisted program here in Oregon of training facilitators to work with people with psilocybin. And he really has some harrowing and kind of disappointing stories to tell from his experiences going through these training programs and ended up deciding that he wanted to create his own psychedelic church and ministry, which is the Silo Sangha. And just had a sit-down conversation with him at his office in downtown Ashland. I'm going to be bringing that to you as the very next interview, because I think it's just very timely, very relevant, and really appreciated all that Ian had to share with me about that. Also coming up, we have Madison Callahan, who's over in Portugal, who runs Iboga Healing and does Bwiti style work with Iboga. We had a great conversation the other week. Looking forward to bringing that to you. And then down in Texas, had a great conversation with Brooke Tarrer, who runs the United Shamans of the New Tomorrow in Theogenic Church, working with Bufo and 5MEO. And we had a great conversation. And there's still more to come. And I also have another interview already scheduled with James Hinn from the Silo Temple up in Eugene, Oregon, which is another entheogenic church. So lots of great stuff coming on the way here on the Entheogenic Evolution podcast. And of course, in between interviews will be additional chapters from the audiobook of my novel, The Solendarian Game. Just a reminder that the full color PDF AI-generated art version of The Solendarian Game is out there on Kindle, the Apple Bookstore, and also available as a PDF at my Patreon shop. You can just go to patreon.com/MartinWBall. There is the shop tab up near the top of the page, and there are, I think, 18 of my books are available as PDFs. And as you probably know, many of my books contain my own artwork, and in these PDFs, it's all in vibrant color. And of course, as I always like to mention, I am available for 30, 60, and 90-minute video calls to help you integrate and reflect on your entheogenic experience. If you would like more information about my integration services, stop by at www.nondualentheogenicintegration.com. And I'm always happy to set up a time to speak with you and enjoy just the amazing diversity of people that I get to speak to every week in doing this. And we will find time to speak with you if that's a service that you feel you could use. All right, well, let's go ahead and get into the conversation with Paul. His websites are psychedelic-awakenings.com. That's for his event. And paulkarasik.com for his personal webpage. That's Paul, KARASIK.com. Here's a conversation from, it was a couple months ago now, but here's me and Paul talking about it all. Okay, well, I am welcoming on to the Entheogenic Evolution podcast today, Paul Karasik, joining me from down there in Southern California. And Paul, we've got a lot of different things that we need to talk about today, because you've got your hat in a few different arenas. You are the CEO of the Psychedelic Institute of Los Angeles. According to your biography, you were also one of the founders of Thompson Ranch, which was an intentional community kind of back in the day. Your latest book is Getting High on Leadership, A Leader's Guide to Higher Consciousness, which actually doesn't talk about psychedelics, which I'm going to ask you about that, and is kind of a little meditation book with a little nuggets of wisdom throughout and some nice illustrations in there. And you also do a lot of public speaking on the topic of leadership and inspiring, and the world of big business, as far as I can tell. And I've got two completely different looking websites up here on my desktop,
right,
to talk about for our conversation today. We have your page, which even makes me think of like a political campaign, because, you know, there's some red, white, and blue in there, and there's a little star, and it looked very professional looking. And then we can go over to the Awakening of Consciousness webpage from this conference that you held in Los Angeles last year. And I understand you're going to be doing it again. And then everything gets really psychedelic really quickly. So yeah, you're a man with several different hats, which I can definitely identify with, because I wear quite a few different ones myself. And yeah, so Paul, welcome to the podcast.
Well, it's great to be here. And we do have a lot in common. So I think this time will go quick and be fun.
Yeah. So I want to get into the book and all of that. I know that this is just released, and I'm sure you're really eager to talk about it. But let's get into some of your background, because of course, here at the very end of the book, I'm just going to go ahead. Okay, spoiler alert. I'm going to scroll to the end of the book, everyone, and it does say here that you were hobnobbing with Timothy Leary and Ram Dass, and again, the co-founder of the Thompson Ranch. One of the first alternative communities in Joshua Tree, California. And so I'd like to get a little bit of your background. And here's some of your backstory. Let's get the origin story for Paul Krassick, if we could start there.
Yeah, well, you can see there's two worlds there. That's really observant of you. And they're sort of interrelated, and the story's connected. So, and how it happened. You know, I started with psychedelics in the 60s, in 1967, when the, you know, initial revolution began. Mm-hmm. I was in my teens, and changed my life. I mean, I don't know if you had a similar type of experience, but with psychedelics, did you have a life-changing psychedelic experience?
I would say my biggest life-changing psychedelic experience came with my first full introduction to 5-MeO-DMT in early 2008. But my earlier psychedelic experiences were really kind of more of a confirmation of my early interests that as a teenager, I learned that I did not like drinking alcohol, but I was very fond of cannabis. And then I became very philosophically inquiring and kind of a self-identified spiritual seeker, interested in Zen Buddhism. Ended up getting my PhD in religious studies, but not coming from a religious or spiritual background. And so my first psychedelic experience with psilocybin mushrooms, it was my second experience, where it kind of dawned on me like, oh, maybe this is what they're talking about when they're talking about the spirit world or a contact with spirits or, you know, these other forms of consciousness. And so it was more of, it's not necessarily that it changed my life, but it gave me like, okay, this is definitely the direction that I want to keep going in, that I'm very interested in exploring this topic much more. Mm-hmm.
It was like, a door open to a new world, and you said, "I want to see what's in this world."
Yeah.
And then you started trying different things.
Yeah, yeah.
Like mushrooms, 5-MeO. Did you do peyote?
Well, for many years, you're interviewing me, Paul. But for many years, it was just cannabis and psychedelic mushrooms. That's pretty much all I had access to. And then somewhat later, got access to Salvia divinorum and became very, very fond of Salvia divinorum.
What'd you think?
Oh, I love Salvia divinorum. It is so different, so strange, so unique. And when I was working with Salvia divinorum, it kept pushing me. That's the best way I can describe it, is it's pushing me. And suddenly coming out of me would be like, like all this throat singing stuff. And it's like, whoa, what's going on there? So I explored Salvia for a number of years. Then in 2008, it was my first full experience with 5-MeO-DMT. Shortly after that came ayahuasca. Also shortly after that came peyote. Then after that came DMT. Then a whole variety of laboratory molecules. So, but for the first 15 or so years of my psychedelic experience was mostly psilocybin mushrooms and then Salvia divinorum. Yeah.
People say when they do Salvia, somebody said they turned into a chair.
Weird stuff like that happens with people. I never experienced that personally, but that's one of the reasons that it's very disconcerting for a lot of people, is they say, well, suddenly I was the paint on the wall and I don't know what the hell to do with that. Whereas for me, Salvia, I described it as a psychedelic tsunami of just suddenly this overwhelming psychedelic experience, where my generic description of it is, for me, is that What happens is that this psychedelic tsunami arises, then reality literally unzips, then it turns inside out several times across multiple dimensions simultaneously, and then eventually zips back up, and then plops you right back down where you were when you started.
Wow.
Yeah, and I find that very interesting.
Have you ever facilitated a salvia session?
Oh, yes, many times. I've worked with a number of people with salvia. And the last time I did that, it was funny because the guy kept I was watching him, and he kept like looking at his foot. And afterwards I said, "So your foot was like stretching out across reality, huh? You're a little worried about it." I was like, "Yeah, how did you know?" And I was like, "Well, because I know that that's how salvia tends to work."
Yeah. He was obsessing on it.
Yeah, he was really worried that he wasn't going to get his foot back because, you know, there's this kind of this smearing effect that happens where oftentimes people will literally fall over because they feel like they're getting pushed and smeared out across reality. And again, with like these multiple dimensions interpenetrating at once. So it's very, very easy for people to get lost. And it's also very easy for people to plop directly into some kind of ego-generated narrative that's feels like they're dropped down in the middle of a movie and they don't know what's going on, but it's like, also, hey, my grandmother's here and she's feeding me oatmeal, and then it suddenly turns inside out again, and the next thing you know, you're sitting underneath a tree in the middle of the desert, like, mm-hmm. What's going on here? And then it does that a few times. It's never worked that way for me. It's much more of just a direct energetic embodiment kind of experience that I go through. I think it's lovely, but it's the kind of psychedelic that 9 out of 10 people who try it say, "I don't ever want to touch that stuff again because it scares them and it's unusual."
Yeah, I've only met the 9. I haven't met you're the first 10.
Yeah.
That I've met. But, you know, I asked a shaman, a very, very learned shaman, what it was with salvia. And she said, salvia, you need to come to salvia with a question. You don't just do it like you do shrooms or you can even do LSD or peyote, like, oh, I'm going to do LSD and go to the beach, or, you know what I mean? Like, or do mushrooms and go to the desert and have a ceremony. You don't need to. But with salvia, you have to come with something. And if you don't come with something, then that's when you, 1 minute you're on an elevator and the next minute you're, you know, swimming across the ocean. That's crazy stuff starts to happen.
Yeah.
But if you come with a real question, then the salvia gives. She had done it. I mean, it wasn't like she was reading out of a book, but.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that somewhat true? I don't know.
Well, again, not for me, because I tended not to approach it that way. But it is one of these things that is very, very powerful and is very confusing for people. So it's really common for people to, especially if they're smoking it, like the enhanced leaf, that they immediately forget that they've taken something. And all they know is that reality just got really, really weird, really fast. And people do tend to try and run away from it. I mean, I've seen videos of people like trying to crawl out of windows, trying to get away. And it's very hard to make contact with the person during that time period. So it's so abrupt that it's just very, very startling and very disconcerting for most people. And probably the shaman that you were talking to is probably actually consuming it via eating it, which is a much different experience. It slows it down. It's much gentler, but it also, it's just different that it interacts with the mu opioid receptor on the brain. So it's not even working on the typical systems that we would get through, either say peyote or mushrooms or something like that. So it's just so, so different. But I always say, like, any self-respecting medicine person has at least got to try it once because it's worth it.
I've done almost every psychedelic many, many times. Acid hundreds of times. High dose trips, really high dose trips, you know, where you see the fabric of the universe.
Yeah.
you know, stuff like that, like DMT, you know, at that level, but sustained for hours, you know, sustained at that DMT level, is then you get to like really kind of swim around, you know, you get to DMT, you kind of like catch it because you're going to be leaving in a minute, you know, like catch the show because it only lasts like 7 minutes here, you know, that type of thing.
Yeah, but, well, smoked salvia is like that as well. It only lasts for about 15 minutes at the most.
Oh, is it? And yeah. It's funny, you were describing the difference between cannabis edibles versus smoking flower. And it was very similar, you know, kind of a thing where you'd say it's totally different.
Yeah.
It's assimilated in a different place, in a different way. It has a different effect. And that's all true. I mean, it's completely different.
Yeah. And with salvia, it goes the opposite direction, where eating it is much gentler versus with cannabis. When you eat that, it tends to get much stronger than smoking it, at least for many people. Yeah.
Sense. Yeah. The body wise. Yeah. It takes over your whole body. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It becomes a very different beast. Yeah. But so thank you for asking some questions, Paul. I'm a talker. You can ask me as many questions as you want, but
no, if I can't learn, then I'm, you know, I don't want to do it.
But tell us more about yourself. So you got to experience psychedelics way back 67. I wasn't even born yet. I was still minus 5 years old at that point. Excuse me.
I know. It's insane. It was a different time. You know, there was a couple people over last night. One gentleman, he owns a cannabis drink company, very good product. And he's in all the stores, illegal product, which is made from Delta 9 hemp. So it's 100% legal. And he's got in 500 stores. And just a really good guy, you know, and his girlfriend. And we were hanging out here at the beach, and we were talking about, you know, the tone of it is now, and the tone of it was then.
Mm-hmm.
And the tone of it was then, people don't understand it. They really don't understand the level of fear, of anxiety constantly that was around in that era that made it so unlike today, you know. For example, I said to my daughter once, my daughters are both feminists and activists and, you know, LGBTQ type stuff. And, you know, I said, sweetie, when I was a kid, if you came out and said you were gay, you would get beat up for sure. That was going to happen. And you might die. In your school, you went to school, you didn't say that. And she looked at me. She looked at me like, no. She couldn't believe that used to happen in America. Well, that's the way it was with psychedelics back then.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way it was back then. It was that bad. It was badder than bad. You couldn't go anywhere where there wasn't a federal agent looking to get stuff on you. You couldn't be at a party. You couldn't be at any event. There was federales taking your name, taking pictures.
Yeah. So it's a very.
I got arrested for failure to report for induction because I didn't want to go kill people in Vietnam. So the FBI came to Haight-Ashbury, where I was living in those days. It was in the middle of the Haight-Ashbury explosion. It was an incredible time. And FBI comes to the door and knock on the door. And, you know, when it was like a commune, everybody, big bowl of pot on the table in the kitchen, like, because there's like 20 people in this like two-bedroom apartment type thing in San Francisco in Haight-Ashbury. And the FBI walk in and they look around and they go, Paul Karasik. And meanwhile, there's a pound of pot sitting on the, you know, on the table. And so they take me away and they take me to a federal court in San Francisco. And now I'm a young kid. I'd been in college. I quit college to move to San Francisco and, you know, become part of that and whatever it was. And grew up in a, you know, middle-class Jewish household. Be a good boy, you know. I mean, I went to Hebrew school, bar mitzvah. Mm-hmm. A good boy, you know, what they would say if you were Jewish.
Yeah, yeah.
A mensch. It was called a mensch.
Yeah.
At least I wanted to do the right thing. So I quit college. I go to San Francisco, right? Stream the same good kid. I get up in front of the judge who arraigned me in federal court for failure to report for induction. And they said, what do we know? What do we have on this kid? And remember, I had never been arrested. I never had any contact with a policeman of any form. He said, he picked up a thing and he read it. He said, Mr. Karasik is a known drug user.
We had a file on you.
That's the way it was.
Yeah.
We had a file on everybody. And people were going to jail. I got arrested for an ounce of pot and given 5 years to life imprisonment.
My goodness. How much of that did you serve? What happened?
Even the judge said, he looked at this young kid, 20 years old, 21 years old, whatever I was. And he said, I can't believe that this young boy is as guilty as a second degree murder.
Yeah.
Or an armed robber. He just doesn't look like that. Like he was apologizing. But back then they had Nixon laws. And the Nixon laws were no strikes. And you went away for the rest of your life if they caught anything on you. It would be like if, yeah, like that was basically what it was. No, you don't get, there's no three strikes, two strikes, or one strike. It's no strikes. You get arrested, you go to jail for the rest of your life.
Yeah. Well, that's a very, very different era. Like even when I started this podcast in 2008, I had concerns of things like that, you know, because here I am putting out this podcast and talking about these subjects. I thought, well, are they going to be keeping a file on me? Are they going to come get me? And then nothing ever happened. So I just got bolder and bolder because nothing ever happened. And now we live in just a very different era where, yeah.
It's crazy. I mean, I can go downtown in the city of LA on a Wednesday night tonight and go to a professional building and they'll be selling pounds of pot. Pounds of mushrooms, ounces of mushrooms, dabs, oil.
Yeah. And nobody's keeping track.
And I went to prison.
Yeah, so how long did you serve?
Not long. Not enough to even say I went to prison, but I went to prison.
Yeah.
And so the times have changed. The times have changed really radically. But it's almost like PTSD, Martin. You know what I mean? Like, I'm still the guy, like, you know, like I'll be like, hey, let's smoke a joint. And so we say, it's legal. I said, I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, you don't recover from that. You don't recover from that. And those times, and they sat here in the living room. They were like, they couldn't believe, no. No.
Yeah.
Every party, every restaurant, every bar, every gathering, you didn't know who you were talking to. People turn in their brothers, their mothers, like Nazi Germany. People ratting on people with consequences that were beyond anything that don't exist today. I mean, you know. I mean, look at it rationally, what's happening in the psychedelics. And rationally, there's a million companies making psychedelics right now. Not a million, but 1,000. Nobody's going to jail.
Yeah, well, we finally got over the drug war propaganda, really. I mean, that was step number one, is kind of getting beyond that. And then actually having research institutes and universities and medical centers start looking at this and saying, well, everything we've been told is bullshit about this stuff. You know, that was my experience. I grew up in Nancy Reagan's Just Say No era. And, he was
a pushover compared to Nixon.
Yeah, Reagan. But, you know, we had these programs in school about how don't ever even try marijuana because you'll turn into this criminal junkie and this is so horrible for you. And my first experience smoking marijuana, as I immediately concluded, everything I've ever been told about this is an absolute lie. None of this is true. And that was kind of the beginnings of sort of the modern hemp movement. That was like Jack Herer and his book Hemp for Victory. And I became, a cannabis reformer and like, oh, we can make everything out of hemp and we can use it as medicine. And when I was young, I also had asthma. And, I had all different kinds of prescriptions for my asthma. And then I discovered, take a couple drags of marijuana, asthma immediately gone. And I was the kind of person with asthma where there was a couple times where I didn't know if I was going to make it because I just could not breathe. Yeah.
I have chronic bronchitis, but I've seen that with kids with asthma. I had a girlfriend. She would wake up her daughter wheezing, and then we said, let's give her some pot.
Yeah.
And made a tea. And it was like, oh my God, this is a miracle. Like, she was at that asthma, like you were saying, where I wouldn't know if she's going to catch her breath on the next coughing thing that would start, you know? That's when things really clicked for me. That day, I was seeing what a miracle this herb is. What a fucking miracle it is.
So effective.
Did you drink it every day? Did you smoke it every day?
So at this time, I was basically, I had like seasonal. Every spring I would get asthma, but I had been on all different kinds of inhalers and stuff like that. And none of the prescriptions ever worked. And so whenever I felt like, oh, I can't breathe, I would just take one or two hits and all of a sudden, oh, I could breathe just fine. So I used that to regulate my asthma. And then eventually my asthma went away. Just disappeared.
They say asthma is totally emotionally rooted.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I've said that about all disease, so that's not such a weird thing to say, but it's almost like you do see that. I see that with a lot of people who have asthma attacks, that they have big emotional burdens, obvious ones.
Yeah. Well, for me, my asthma started when my parents got divorced. So that would be the emotional tie-in, but then it became an anxiety issue. With spring would arrive and I was like, oh God, it's asthma season again. And so I think that the anxiety would build on that, but then the cannabis just cut right through it. Just solved that problem.
So in those periods you would drink tea or smoke or something.
Yeah. Yeah. If I felt like I'm starting to wheeze, just take a couple hits and I'm breathing just fine. And it used to be something that would wake me up at night where I wouldn't be able to breathe. And so I'd take a hit in the middle of the night, get back to bed. Yeah. Yeah. Really worked.
It's amazing. I mean, it blows me away how good it, I drank it when I had mold in my lungs. Mm. I was staying in a place here by the beach and there was mold. And I don't know if you know that about mold, but it's really scary shit. It's like a horror movie. You know what I mean? Like it takes over your lungs and you and it grows into the fabric of, it's like, like alien type vibe to it. And there's no cure for it. And there's no treatment for it. Really. And I tried everything. I was getting blood transfusions. I tried all kinds of infrared stuff. I tried all kinds of stuff. And then I finally tried tinctures, THC tinctures. A week later, I had no more. My lungs were fine.
Oh. Well, it does wonders. So I'm enjoying the conversation, Paul, and I think we could just keep chatting about all of this stuff. But your assistant did say that wanted to keep the interview within an hour, so I'm gonna jump ahead a little bit then, and this is relevant to what we have been talking about, but for example, putting on this conference, let me call it up again. It was the Awakening of Consciousness event that happened in Los Angeles in July of last year.
And our new one, Martin, is September 28th and 29th.
Okay, so coming up this year.
Yeah, we'll have that website up shortly.
So that's a big change from going from necessary paranoia of who's watching, who's keeping track, who's writing down the notes, to then putting on a public event. When, at what part of your life did you feel okay to make that transition into more publicly facing around psychedelics and having the chutzpah to put on a conference like this or an event like this?
What happened was I devoted my life after I got sober to living the American life and living the external life. You know, even though I had all those awakenings in the 60s, 70s, and really, you know, without integration of those experiences, we're in the same places we never had them. Right?
Yeah.
You see, we're all one, and I'm you, and you're me. And then I go back and I start beating my wife.
Right.
You see, you know, love is all there is. And then you express it in some weird way, reacting to something, to somebody. Like, and so that disconnect became wider and wider. And my natural addictive behaviors and so on really took over my life. The edge, really the edge, I would say, emotionally, mentally. On the external side, you know, big success, you know, author of 8 books and on TV, and, you know, on stages. You know, I've spoken all over the country and the world, and completely empty inside, just completely hollow. And of course, when we're hollow inside or have that kind of disconnect inside, it externalizes itself, as we talked a little bit earlier, in physical illness. And that's what happened. And it was late 2019. I'm on an elevator in Toronto. I was there. I have my own management consulting firm for like 35 years. So I do work, I trainings, workshops, all kinds of things like that. Leadership, management. So I'm like feeling good. I just done a job and I'm like on the elevator and the phone rings. And it's my doctor. I had taken some tests about a week or so before. And the doctor, you know, it's never a good sign when doctors call you, you know. Yeah. Generally, they don't even have time to see you. So, like, if they have time to call you, something's really off, you know. And, you know, he told me I was really in trouble. And that, you know, it could really go either way. And that began a 3-year period of deep, deep, deep work. Transformational, for sure. Looking at it all, observing, watching, and using psychedelics and being guided by the psychedelics, allowing the psychedelics to open me up to my intuitive, my entities, my guardian angels, whatever you want to say. But it's that place that you know as well, I'm sure, where it's a knowing that's beyond thinking.
Mm-hmm.
It's a knowing that's not connected to a process. It's that pure knowing. And the pure knowing is what we all find out on psychedelics, that we're here to express that divine message. that's why we're here. And like, and anything that we're not doing that, then we're not on track, you know? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so we're not going to feel connected. And so what is that? And, you know, I've been doing this stuff, you know, how, I don't know if it happened to you, but I had it on my last DMT experience where it shows you like this was led to that. And we had to do that. You had to do that to get to this. You know what I'm saying? That did yeah. you ever, yeah. You know what I'm talking about? Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, you go, like, why did I do that? Well, you needed to do that to get to this so you could do that. And that was the only way there. You know, that's why and it made the most sense. Even if it's things like that happened to me, you know, that was meant to be, you know, to get to that crisis point and to learn how to heal and to learn how to become one with myself, you know, and for the first time. And, you know, when you speak to people, and I'm sure you've had them on your shows many times with addictions, you know, it's real dark.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's just the nature of it. And it's a lot of real low, 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 low stuff, you know, that and attachments and that type of thing. And of course, that manifests as fear and anxiety and worry and then make us do all the shit. And that's really what, you know, I needed to stop. Had to stop. Just had to stop. And I just put on the brakes. Stop everything. Stop everything. First of all, I got to heal.
Mm-hmm.
And I was blessed and healed. And that was a miracle. And that was a miracle. You know, I mean, you know, it doesn't happen like that. And when you're given that time, then you say, well, what am I supposed to do? You know, I've been doing events since I'm 9 years old. I produced my first event at 9. Like, when COVID came, like, that's my life. I mean, there's no, you know, I either I'm speaking at an event, I'm promoting an event, we're organizing an event, I'm playing music at an event. I'm going to an event just for fun because that's where my peeps are. But you know what I mean? It was like everything for me was around the event. So the messaging I was getting was the Psychedelic Institute. You know, that this is to bring the healing that you're having with psychedelics, because that 3-year period, Martin, was very much devoted to deep introspection with psychedelics. So, you know, I was so grateful to have that time, you know, to really pull back and pick it apart. You know, how did I end up there? After starting out, seeing such beauty, seeing such, you know, love child, seeing and knowing that we are all love, that we are all divine, and then succumbing to that, hitting that bottom, you know, of depravity. You know, that really is fascinating. That's fascinating, that gap between what you know to be true about yourself and the world around you and how you act. You know, and when that gap gets too big, then we get sick.
Yeah. It is really a reflection of the reality that at the end of the day, it doesn't matter how many big, deep revelations you've had, how many beautiful experiences you've had with your psychedelics. If you're not learning how to live from that place, it doesn't really matter too much. Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
Just another experience.
Yeah. And so I really wanted to do, you know, I've been speaking at conferences and putting on conferences. So our first conference with this new kind of, I guess, you know, being sort of I want to say called. You know, I think you're called. I think that you meet a lot of people on these podcasts that have been called. And where I say, like, what else could I be doing?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like, what, you know, real estate? Like, what, you know, like making $1 million? That never interested me at all. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
You know, it's like, what else could we be doing? But this, but that has to be something that impacts a lot of people. And you know, it's from that the event came out. And we had great speakers. We're having even better speakers this year. I mean, really thrilling. You know, as we grow, we're attracting. And none of our speakers get paid. And none of them, even their transportation. And they're amazing. They're, you know, they're amazing, and they want to come back. And and because when you have the calling, then you say, well, I'll speak at this conference because I'm supposed to be, and then whatever I need. And such pablum, new age bullshit, but it's so true. It's going to be fine. You know, I'll get gigs from it. And, you know, I asked all my sponsors at the last event, I said, how'd you do? And they all went, it was amazing. You know, like, and now, like, I'd say, well, give me some numbers. Like, don't even worry about it. You know, like, and that's, you know, that's because they had the calling, you know, whether it's running a retreat center for Ibogaine in South America, or it's creating, you know, a line of, you know, non-psychedelic tinctures that are just healthy for you, or it's a mushroom in a bag company. You know, they're all, we're all like soldiers, you know, in this thing that's almost like a mycelium, you know, in our culture, you know, that's just like, right? You know what I mean? It's like beyond, like, you can't kill it. It's like, it's here.
Yeah. So if I'm hearing you correctly, and correct me if I'm wrong, you were an enthusiastic explorer of all these things when you were younger. And then it kind of went into a dark place and wasn't really serving you. So then you kind of went on the straight and narrow path.
Yeah,
business, public.
Famous, you know, TV, on radio, PBS show, blah, 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 you know.
And then it was a relatively recent personal medical crisis that reopened up that world for you of psychedelics and the potential for healing. And then coming out of that with that focus on, what do I do now? And how do I give back? How do I help others achieve what I've achieved and what I've experienced through this reintroduction to these psychedelic medicines? So it sounds like there was a rather large period of your life where you were not involved with psychedelics, and that this story is not at all that unusual at this point in time. I have spoken with many people who say, yeah, I was back in the 60s and 70s, and then last year, I had my first mushroom experience in 30, 40 years, something like that. Yeah.
I hear it a lot too. You know, I interview speakers. We've interviewed probably 50 or 100 already for the conference. Many of them. And it's always the same year too, 2019, maybe 18, but usually 19 or 20. That's when some shit went down.
Yeah.
And somebody made a shift. Did you make a shift in that year period?
My personal story of 2019 is I've had lifelong difficulties with sleep ever since I was a little infant. And in 2019, in January, I completely lost the ability to sleep for 10 consecutive days. And then for most of 2019, only got 1 or 2 hours of sleep per night. And I'm now much more healthfully living with a chronic sleep disorder. But that was actually one of the only periods where I had to stop my podcast for a period of time. And I was teaching at the local university here in Ashland, and I had to take an emergency medical leave. And basically I had to stop everything in my life because I was in just chronic sleep deprivation. And it was really, really awful. But that was my 2019. It was not a good year for me. Very, very difficult year.
Well, you must have haven't had an awakening.
Only in the sense that I wasn't sleeping. I got a whole book out of it. And maybe you'll enjoy the title that I gave the book. It's A Sleep Story, An Unintentional Exploration of the Altered States of Being Awake. So, yeah, I was awake. I was awake, like, way too much.
Wow.
No, but it was bad. It was really, really bad.
I feel like tripping after 2 or 3 days.
Tripping, but in
like tripping, like when they show it in a movie, where like, I don't know where I'm going, you know, like I'm tripping. Yeah. Like, I've never tripped like that, but they show in the movie that way.
Yeah. Towards the end of the 10 days, it did get that way for me. But honestly, what you don't really hear about with lack of sleep or sleep deprivation is, you know, people talk about how tired they are and how they get confused. But for me, actually, it was the physical sensations. It felt like I was dying, like every moment, like, and not in a, yay, I'm going, I'm ready. But it just like this, oh, just these torturous, really horrifically awful sensations, just wave after wave after wave, and trying to lie down and rest and just being consumed with these just absolutely horrendous sensations. It was absolute torture. It was like nonstop torture for months and months and months and months and months. It was absolutely horrendous, just awful. And then nighttime was often like tripping, lots of hallucinating going on, in really uncomfortable ways. That's why I call it the unintentional exploration of the altered states of being awake. There's a lot of altered states in there, and they're just not pleasant, just really, really awful. So I don't recommend it for
anyone. That's what you get from doing that salvia.
Well, you know, that's what a lot of people came back to me with, is like, well, you took too many drugs. It's like, no,
oh, that's bullshit.
It's just not related.
I was going to say, did you try ayahuasca during that session?
Not during that period. No.
Yeah. I think those shaman down there, especially down there. I mean, you know, the real, up the river guys, they know how to, what that is an entity.
Well, the way that I like to describe it.
That takes over. I mean, it's not an exorcism, like, but ayahuasca can purify that.
Yeah. Well, so far, nothing's really been able to help. I have been able to process some of the awfulness through psychedelic experience, but it is an ongoing issue for me, unfortunately. You know, prior to then, I was running kind of similar to what you're describing for your event in Los Angeles. I was running the Exploring Psychedelics Conference here in Ashland. I did that for 5 years. I was putting it on for free. And there were no sponsors, and no one was being paid to speak or anything like that, but it definitely was a passion for everybody who was participating in that. But yeah, then this happened to me in 2019. And so I was offline for most of the year, and then 2020, of course, we get COVID and all of that. And so my life has been very different ever since then. So these days, mostly I sit here in my office and I talk to people.
Have the psychedelics helped at all to get rid of the sleep thing?
Again, not to get rid of it. It's still a nightly issue for me, but it has helped definitely process what I was describing of those really, really awful sensations. And particularly there, what has helped the most has actually been MDMA, of going through these events with MDMA, of really submitting to those awful sensations and then letting them wash out. Mm-hmm. So that has helped. But so far, yeah, I still, you know, I do live with this chronic sleep disorder. So I do describe myself as somewhat disabled. That's why, like when I was going back and forth with your assistant about when to have our conversation, that I said, well, 11 a.m. is when I start, because my mornings are very, very unpredictable in terms of how awake or functional I am. So it is difficult.
Yeah, that's a tough thing. Well, I think if you really try, you'll get it under control. You know, yeah. That's what somebody said to me. Look, my diagnosis wasn't good, you know, trust me. And, I found a way, and that's, it's there, you know, but you got to keep looking, you know, you can't just accept no for an answer. Yeah. And, I was told I needed a transplant and like all kinds of stuff. I didn't do any of that, you know, but the solution, you know, presented itself, and that's, you know, I think what you have, there's an answer to, I really do. You know, if you set your mind to it and say, I'm going to find the solution, you know, keep looking, don't give up, you know?
Yeah. Well,
you're fine. You'll sleep like a baby one day.
Yeah. Well, I look forward to that. It's been a long time. I'll tell you.
Just to promote this book.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's talk about your book.
Yeah. That's enough. I think I got you the idea of the event and kind of its evolution, right? You kind of got the vibe on how things kind of evolved with that. Part of it is helping people that are in leadership positions. And that's where the leadership, getting high on leadership came in, because, you know, I said, well, I want to carry this message that psychedelics can give you an awakening that can change your life if you integrate it properly. It's the beginning of something that's spectacular. To carry that message to people, leaders need to be informed. Mm-hmm. To be good at what they do, they need to be able to carry that message and into all kinds of different areas, you know. And even people, the book really wasn't written for psychedelics, but it was written for, you know, I've done 30, almost 35 years of management and leadership development in corporations, and I see what good leaders are, and I see what bad leaders are, and they're always the same, both groups. And I thought, boy, I'd love to share for those who want to do this, but let's look at it purely from consciousness. Mm-hmm. Let's not look at it from skill sets of how to organize a meeting. And, you know, I mean, I actually tiptoe around some of that in a fun way in the book. But it's not about that. It's about, if the consciousness of the leader changes, then both the consciousness and the results of the group are transformed. You know, that thing, you can't solve the solution with the consciousness that got you the problem.
Right.
So how could a dysfunctional leader, an unconscious leader, ever lead a group that becomes conscious and becomes awake and becomes alive and interactive and team building, things like a team and all that good stuff? You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
The book was built around the idea of getting high. One, leading from a different place, leading from a different, I call it mindset. So the book is broken up into set, setting, and integration. Just mm-hmm. Thought those were good words. So the first section is mindset. You know, what is the mindset of a great leader, you know, in terms of consciousness? Because all the results that are going to come from their own, in their own reign, in whatever they're leading, is based on one thing, how high their consciousness is. So that's why we say getting high on leadership, using leadership to be a tool, to be a vehicle, to be a facilitator, to raise your own consciousness and equally raise the consciousness of the group. Magical things happen when you don't have a lot of politicking in an organization. My work as an independent consultant has been with a lot of corporate stuff, and so much more would get done. So much more would get accomplished if people had more consciousness.
Yeah.
And weren't selfish or political and everything that went down the pike. They get 10 times as much done. And that's the message of the book.
Yeah. So, Paul, let me ask you, I know that this is your 9th book. It seems like this is the first book that has come out of this new phase of your life, if I am correct. So how would you distinguish this book from things you've written earlier? I mean, we've got this idea of the mindset, and we've got integration, kind of using sort of this psychedelic model that's framing the book, which is not itself about psychedelics necessarily, but it's using that wisdom and bringing that into that. Is this a new breath in what you've been sharing through your written works before, or is this something that you feel is fundamentally different from what you've done before?
That's a great question. It's threaded through my message, through why I'm different as a consultant in what I do. And I've always taught relationship skills and, how relationships end up in best ways in business and in everything that in life and our happiness is all about relationships. And that the relationships, you immediately get into consciousness. You immediately get into what makes a relationship work.
Mm-hmm.
Forgiveness, right? Trust, kind of higher level things start to play into to have a good relationship. More high-minded words come into play than I'm the boss and he listens to me.
Yeah.
And that's what I tell him, and I give him this much money. And, that's the polar opposite of what we're talking about here. But yeah, you're picking up on a truth. There's a lot of leaders that just have never even pondered the idea about how they treat people. Why people don't last, they quit. And I used to talk about those things, but I danced around them. The first conference, you'll love this. I gave my coming out talk to open up the conference. And it was like, I felt like what it would have been like to be gay, I'm on a stage. I love psychedelics, I know this old guy fucking loves them. I didn't say that in the speech, but it was so, oh God, I was so like relieved that I could stand in front of people and admit, you know what I mean? It's like, it was just like intense. It was intense to feel that. And I still work in the corporate world, but whoever hears it. And like, I've actually got some great corporate, a lot of corporate endorsements. So
yeah, there was something I wanted to ask you about though. Do you feel there's any discontinuity between the psychedelic life and sort of the corporate leadership life? For example, sometimes I have people on and interview them and we have a great interview. And then sometime later, I get a message from them saying, oh, they're going to find out about this at work. I'm sorry. Can you take the interview down? So there still are a lot of people who feel that they need to hide, that they need to be in the closet around psychedelics.
I didn't know you were sending this out.
Oh yeah. Everyone's going to know now, Paul.
Uh-huh. No, I'm on a couple. Don't worry about it. So what do you say?
You know, in a case like that, if somebody is requesting that I remove something because they feel they need to protect themselves, I'll do it. I've always been rather kind of brazen about all of it, and have intentionally not taken the path of hiding in any way. But I can respect the fact that, you know, people have their professional life and then they have their interests in psychedelics and what that has given them in their lives, and still feel that their professional career might be in jeopardy. And I think that that's something that's changing a lot. But for example, it was just a few weeks ago, I did get a request from someone whose interview has been up for well over a year, a really great interview, and said, oh, people at work found out. Can you please remove it right away? You know, just very, very concerned about that. And so, you know, I want to respect people's wishes.
They hope your podcast is a loser. They're figuring nobody's ever going to hear this, so I might as well go on. That's such a kick in the head from behind. Like, when they found that a lot of people actually listened to your podcast, now he's upset. Like,
well,
he
no, it's, upset
it's, before he found out that you're popular.
No, it was that the wrong people might hear it. And this actually was not that someone at work had heard this podcast, but had found out that this person was involved with psychedelics. And so this person was concerned that there was, you know, further evidence available online. And, you know, so I want to respect that I'm not going to tell somebody.
And it depends what job. Listen, you know, we had my regular doctor came to our second year. No, our first conference. And we had a beautiful pre-party where it's fabulous and all the speakers are there and the media and everybody. And I invited her to that, the VIPs. Mm-hmm. And, you know, everybody's smoking pot. And she's like, works at the Provident Hospital thing up here. And I said, oh, make sure you take a joint with you when you leave. And she said, I can't touch. If she touches it, she could lose her whole license, her medical license, if she touched marijuana. Isn't that amazing? So there's people that can't go near it. I get that. But see, as a management consultant, you're always dabbling on those, you know, on that humanistic edge. And, you know, I'm actually doing ceremonies with facilitating with people in corporate because they're leaders.
Yeah.
Leaders. And if we can open up the consciousness of leaders, then we touch so many people. You know, we can either go to the people themselves, or we get to the leaders, then the leaders touch the people and we have leverage. You know, that's the main idea. So they are changing and they are embracing psychedelics in the corporate market today. And whether it's, you know, LSD microdose in Silicon Valley, hey, you think it stops at microdose? Come on.
Yeah.
You know, like everybody's, well, nobody wants to say they're tripping their balls off on the weekend up in Silicon Valley. But trust me, you know, it's not, I'm just microdosing for my creativity to do the next chip. But
no, certainly not. And previously I had Satyan Raja as a guest on my podcast. He lives up in the Vancouver area and he does a lot of this leadership corporate stuff. And he'll take people out on the weekend and facilitate DMT and 5-MeO-DMT with them. And with the same mentality of that, we want to be working with people who are in leadership positions.
Yeah.
And change their consciousness, change their experience, let them embrace a new set of values so that they can bring that into their position of leadership or in the business world or wherever it may be, so that not only are we going grassroots bottom up, but we're also going top down in terms of the cultural structure. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and consultants, management consultants like him and I, we have a strange kind of back door to those people because they're always hiring us and they know they need us.
Yeah.
So it's like, and if we say, hey, here's something that will help you, they generally are open to the idea because that's where the guys they go to for that stuff of, you know, answers and solutions. If they had them all, they wouldn't use consultants. More on that management, softer stuff, right? More than the you know, Deloitte Touche type, doing your accounting, whatever, that type of thing. But on the management side, yeah, there's a bunch of guys, I think, that consultants that hang out in that, doing that kind of stuff. Well, that was the idea with the book. You know, the idea was, you know, give this concept something more. You know, give it a structure, give it direction. But unlike the other books, to your question, the other books were much more tactical. I don't know. They're like, you know, how to market to high net worth. Book on how to do seminars, kind of speaking and influence and that kind of thing. My book on communicating persuasively, the called Sweet Persuasion. You're picking up on it. It was like you don't have to sell from a win lose. You know, that the whole concept of that, you can create mutually profitable relationships with other people where you both do well. And that, you know, it was like, it was elements of consciousness in that concept that was informed by LSD and, you know, everything else.
But it sounds like with this new book, it's more of a specific articulation of kind of this paradigmatic view of raising consciousness among leaders in order to have more effective leadership and a better culture at work, and then getting better results as well.
Yeah, so people feel better. Retention's is greater. Because, you know, there's people that lead like this. Now, I've worked with them, but it's just such a very small percentage. The rest are from, like, you know, 6 down to 1, on a 1 to 10, you know. And different industries are, you know, more prone than other industries. I think, you know, service industries, by their nature, they tend to be more open to these concepts than, let's say, venture fund capital. Yeah. You know.
Well, then let me ask you, Paul, if you could pick your ideal demographic for this book. And again, we can say the name, that it is Getting High on Leadership, A Leader's Guide to Higher Consciousness. So if you could pick an ideal demographic, like if you would want this book to break into a specific leadership market, where do you think it would be the most impactful and make the biggest waves?
I think in organizations. Organizations that rely on people working together. Listen, a lot of people who aren't in organizations, you know, entrepreneurs are leaders. It's funny. I ask people, as a marketing consultant, I ask that question all the time. And when people can't answer it, I said, you're fucked. You know, you're absolutely, you know, now you're asking me and I can't answer it, which is really scary right now. I would say, who I picture reading this book are mostly people in business. But I said I would open it up, say nonprofits, but in business, and who work within organizations that they know could be improved. They know that there's something missing. And why people don't like working there, why there's so much turnover, why there's conflict. And it begins with the leader. And that's who I wrote the book for, you know, to say, hey, check these ideas out. And then, of course, people that want to get better at leadership that are in those roles right now, You know, the biggest problem with leadership is people, like, you're a leader, but you don't think of yourself as a leader. You think of yourself, I do some program facilitation, I have a podcast. But you, if I said, you know, if you're a lead, that's your main thing, is you're a leader. That's of all the things you do, but you don't think of yourself that way.
No.
No, that's the other person I want to speak to. You know, I think you can have two or three demographics in a book. That's the other person, that's not owning it. That's why the first thing, the first chapter, what would you call them, poems or songs? I'm a songwriter, and that's what they look like, you know?
Yeah.
So I've had some musical success with songwriting. So I thought...
I think the passages is a good description. Yeah, because it's not a textual book of reading from chapter to chapter. It's these little individual sections that have these little passages, or it might be a little poem or a little thought piece. So they're kind of contemplative units, maybe.
Yeah. Well, one guy, he's a high-level financial executive, and he said he actually felt his consciousness changed reading the book. That he had a shift, and he doesn't do any psychedelics or anything of any kind. I don't think he drinks. In fact, he's a client of mine as well, coaching client. I think he's mostly just he's a Christian, very involved with the church, and that's his whole thing in that. So, but he said, and that was like the greatest compliment I've ever had. Of all the books I've ever written, that I actually affected their consciousness.
Yeah. Like,
wow.
Well, that's beautiful.
Yeah, I thought that was such a beautiful thing to say. And most books, some books can do that. Have you ever had that experience with a book where it jacked you up?
No, I don't think so. From a book,
let me try it because I know you've read Power of Now.
I have not read Power of Now.
Oh my God! Okay, yeah, that was the book. I asked my brother, and he goes, "It's the only book that you actually get high reading," and it's true. Power of Now.
Well, I do have a lot of people say that about my books, reading my books, but I write those for people to inspire them, and also. You know, I'm very descriptive in the language that I use. So it's very common for me to hear from readers of my own books that they read a passage and then I started feeling it. And oh my, it was really going.
Oh.
But yeah, I've never read Power of Now. I've listened to Eckhart Tolle speak, and I honestly don't find him energetically very attractive.
The older he gets, he's like now just this, man, you guys. Yeah. It's like he can't get it quite out of his mouth. It's like, that German or whatever. Yeah, he was horrible in his youth. He's worse now. Yeah, really.
But I will say, since it's culturally relevant at the moment, this is kind of related to the question that you asked, but it's different. But when I was a teenager and when I read the first Dune book by Frank Herbert, that book for me was something of a revelation because I felt that I learned more about politics and economics and ecology than I'd ever learned in my entire life up until that point. And so for me, that was a revelation about this is how things work. Oh my God. And it wasn't quite what you're asking about here, but that was a book that just had a massive, massive impact on me.
It did. Yeah. And it's not like you're reading how to assemble a paper plane or something. It's something that's affecting your overall consciousness about the way you see the world or understand something. Another book for me was Autobiography of a Yogi, Paramahansa Yogananda. And I just bought it again. I bought another copy recently and started reading it, and it didn't have any of the effect that it had in the beginning.
Yeah.
Well. But when I read it the first time, when he would talk about doing, his guru would disappear and then died and then came back and he's telling the truth. And it's a weird thing. I don't know if you know this, but Steve Jobs carried that book around with him every day of his life in his briefcase, The Autobiography of a Yogi. by Yogananda. It's funny because I carried a pamphlet around my whole life. It's still in my business bag. I keep it in my business bag. But yeah, that book touched people, touched a lot of people at the time. A friend of mine wrote a book called Creative Visualization. And that had some elements of, you know, where you start to imagine, you know, the way things you want them to be. And kind of consciousness oriented exercises, I would say. Yeah. But anyway, that I think that's the target market. Did you looked at a little bit of it? You know, you kind of briefly checked it out, I'm sure.
Oh, I read through the whole thing. I always like to read the entire books. If I have a guest on the show, I'll read the whole thing.
Did you really?
Yeah. Yeah, I read through the whole thing. And something that we haven't commented on is I really enjoy all the black and white line art throughout the book. Really enjoyed that quite a bit. I thought it's a very nice complement to these different sort of meditative thought pieces that you have through here. And yeah, I enjoyed reading it. I got the PDF and was happy to read through it. And that's when I reached back out to your assistant and said, okay, I've got the book read, so let's go ahead and schedule an interview.
Holy moly. That's so impressive. I don't think a lot of podcasters do that.
I don't think they do. But for me, especially myself being an author, I've been interviewed by plenty of people who have not read my books. And so I know what it's like to be an author. And like, you want people to like actually ask about, you know, what you've done. And so I do make it a point that if I'm bringing on an author, if they have a book that's coming out, I want to read that so that I know what they have to say. And there are sometimes also where I get submissions from authors and I just say, well, you know, I don't think it's a good fit for my show, but thanks. Yeah. I read your book, but I don't think it'll work out.
Yeah. They're too heady or something. So with your book, can send me a link if you have it. I'd love to see. What's your biggest book? You did a lot of books. So.
I've done a lot of books. My biggest book is this one, In Theogenic Liberation, Unraveling the Enigma of Non-Duality with 5-MeO-DMT Energetic Therapy. So that's been my bestseller for a long time.
With 5-MeO?
Yeah.
Hey, why don't you come and speak at the conference? We need a good DMT speaker. We had a panel both conferences.
Yeah, I noticed. I saw your lineup. Yeah. My relationship with the public is a little bit complicated these days, but we can talk about that.
Oh, well, it wasn't public. It was me asking you. I wasn't a public person at that moment. No, I know what you mean. I would love to have you. It's hard to find somebody of your caliber to speak on DMT. You know, they really... you know, knows it. And
there are very few people out there with my level of experience and information on this particular molecule, 5-MeO. So that's what I tend to be most known for, is my work on 5-MeO-DMT and its relationship to non-duality and the unitary nature of being.
Oh, yeah. I could see the connection. Somebody gave me a DMT pen. Are they good? I don't know. Is it any good?
Okay. Well, it depends. I've not come across a DMT pen, but certainly I've come across the 5-MeO DMT pens, and they tend to be produced in graduated levels, and I've found that they seem to be fairly accurate in terms of, you know, what's a low, medium, or high dose within the pen itself. So my opinion of them is that they're perfectly effective. But if you're specifically talking about a DMT versus a 5-MeO DMT pen, I have not myself personally encountered a DMT pen. So, but I would imagine it probably works just fine. I mean, the 5-MeO pens are perfectly effective.
Yeah, the one I had a DMT. Well, it would be NN DMT. Mm-hmm. It just put me in a weird place. I didn't like it. It was sort of like in the hall.
Mm.
You know, it was like in
between. Yeah, yeah.
Like
yeah.
I was searching for like a little kind of fractal or something. And finally, this little red thing came up. And I'm like, wait, you know, like.
Yeah.
No real consciousness change. I mean, and then I gave it to a friend of mine. He's sucking on it for like 3 minutes. It's supposed to be like 3 or 4. And I finally grabbed it from him. I said, hey, give me that, you know.
Yeah. Well, that just sounds like a dud to me, or maybe that it was intentionally made as like a microdosing pen, because that's something that people are doing now, is creating 5-MeO and DMT microdosing pens. And they're supposed to be very, very low. But I was gifted a set of these graduated 5-MeO pens, and they work just fine. They're like, even if you work with just the lowest level one, it's undeniably a powerful 5-MeO experience. Yeah. So seems to work all right to me.
I got it. And there's a difference. And this is chemically made, right? 5-MeO. It's not from the frog.
Or from the toad. No. Yeah, this would be pure molecule. This would be pure freebase lab made 5-MeO DMT, which is very highly effective.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do people say it's different than the frog?
Some people do claim that it's different. There's a lot of opinions there that people who work with the Sonoran Desert toad tend to be very fond of the toad, and sometimes they get dismissive of lab-made synthetic molecules. And then other people, I tend to be of this position that in my experience and opinion, I think that the pure molecule is a cleaner experience. And I think that it's a bit easier to work with, and certainly much easier to regulate dosage with. But in my experience, they're both perfectly effective. And I also work as a professional integration coach with people. So I'm getting clients from both the Bufo side, the toad side, and also people just working with the synthetic molecule. And from that level, I will tell you that there is nothing that one camp has come to talk to me about that the other camp has not also talked about. So they're all experiencing the same kinds of issues, the same kinds of experiences. That from that level, there is no fundamental difference, well, as far as I'm concerned.
The synthetic psilocybin versus, the fungus. People have the same experience. I've done DMT twice. I'm sure it was 5-MeO. And both times it was synthetic. First time it was almost like a plastic. I remember it was like a purple reddish plastic, and it would bubble like that. Didn't smell like it. It had a smell that I'll never forget. It's probably the same smell today.
Yeah, that sounds like DMT. That in terms of the color of it, and the substance of it, that sounds more like DMT. But
it could have been, but my experience was totally spiritual.
Yeah,
it wasn't just fractal thing running out. Right. It was I heard angels sing, and it could have been DMT. Yeah, it could have been. But, that's when people – but the last time I did it, it was Frog. Yeah.
Yeah. The 5-MeO DMT is definitely significantly stronger than DMT. It's a far more potent molecule.
Yeah. Yeah, that time was something else. But, let's talk offline. I'll just let Bree know that – it's a subject that you could definitely shed some light on, and see what it looks like.
Okay.
As far as that, but
Paul, I think we could just keep conversing here. But your assistant did say, could we keep this to an hour? And we've already gone 90 minutes. So.
So
maybe I'll let you go. Let's remind people again where they can find you online. And also, I know you're going to be updating the Awakening of Consciousness website. But where can they find you, and also information about the LA event?
So Psychedelic Awakening, psychedelic-awakening.com. That's our event. And then we've got about 20 speakers booked already. We're just filling up the last slots. And got a great location. September 28th, 29th. We're also on Instagram, Psychedelic Institute Los Angeles, on Instagram. The website, we should have the website up for the event probably within the next month. We're actually so far ahead now, it's beautiful, and we're going to stay that way. So by next month, we'll have the website up.
Great.
And, we'll finish up with the speakers. As far as getting the book, you can get it on Amazon. And love to get some feedback on it. I appreciate your comments. That was just really, that was super that you read the book and had a good time for it.
Yeah, getting high on leadership.
Thank you so much for having me as a guest. Let's plan to follow up on this stuff that we kind of threw up in the air.
Yeah.
And hopefully we'll meet again soon and interact and see where it goes from there.
All right, Paul. Yeah, thanks for being on. It's been great to get to know you.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. See you soon, Mark.
Okay, bye-bye.